Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 107, recorded Wednesday, January 29th, 2014. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: getting serious about hotel reviews, and the TSA gets something right. Well, I'm brushing aside the cobwebs to make my way back into the Travel Commons studio outside of Chicago, Illinois. It has been a while, September, since the last episode, but I'll tell you, I didn't completely abandon Travel Commons. In November, I put together a quick video with recommendations from my spring trip to Madrid, and then last month in December, I updated my list of holiday travel tips, a post that I've just found myself doing every other year. The video, What to Do in Madrid in 180 Seconds. Yes, the title does bow to the gods of search engine optimization, but anyhow, the video is a quick rundown, 3 minutes, for those of you who are a little math-challenged, of what I enjoyed most in Madrid. Seeing Guernica, walking through the markets, finding a microbrewery run by a Michigan expat, and eating in restaurants. It's a bit different from the podcast. It's about a destination, Madrid, rather than the journey, and a video rather than an audio, which are the reasons I didn't push it out through the iTunes or RSS feed. I'll probably do another one for New Orleans sometime soon. I figure I ought to, since I've been traveling there since last April, figure I ought to have something to say. I will tell you, though, that doing the Madrid video reminded me why I don't do more videos. They take a huge amount of time. I mean, it easily took me 90 minutes of production time for each minute of video, and that doesn't count the original content creation, taking the pictures, thinking through the content, writing the voiceover. Now, my wife gave me one of those GoPro Hero cameras for Christmas. I don't know, maybe I'll clamp it onto the handlebars of a rental bike and pedal it through New Orleans. Maybe that'll make things go a little faster. Or be a little bit more exciting if I ride into some of the more interesting parts of town. Following up, a couple of good comments from the Travel Commons website that I've been saving up since October. In the last podcast, I talked through the current load of weather and mapping tools that I've been using on my iPhone and Google tablet. Rich Fraser had the following comment. He said, the thing that struck me during the episode, and you've mentioned it before, is how our tools have evolved over the years. Here is what I am using on my Android smartphone. For maps, it's Google Maps, although their latest release hasn't been the most user-friendly compared to the replaced version. Nice thing about it is that it leverages your other Google searches and your other devices. For example, the map I created on my laptop is now accessible on my smartphone. For flight information, it's FlightAware all the way. I've learned of flight delays from FlightAware before the airline posted them. In most cases, you can find out where your connecting equipment is coming from, so that even if the flight you're on is running behind, you can also find out if the connection will be delayed. That's a huge peace of mind. That said, all the airline mobile apps have gotten much better at relaying flight information than even a year ago. For weather, it's a matter of taste. I am a pilot myself, and there's an app called Aviation Weather that gives me the plain text terminal area forecast for airports I'm flying to. It's a good way of predicting delays at places like Newark or O'Hare. For traveling as long as I or we have, you gotta admit that with all the information at one's fingertips, it has removed most of the stress from traveling. Hey, well, Rich, thanks. Thanks for walking us through that. I tell you, I had been bouncing between FlightAware and FlightStats But I've settled on FlightAware just because of that connecting equipment information. I mean, when I have a flight that posts a delay, my first question is always, is the inbound flight in the air? Because until it is, the estimated departure that they post isn't much better than a finger in the air. Now, once it's on its way, though, I've found that the departure estimate, I don't know, might slip 15, 20 minutes, but it's usually pretty good. Now, United Airlines' iPhone app does this also. You know, you got to think, given United's recent on-time performance, it's probably one of the most useful parts of the app. The reason I was talking about those apps in the last episode was because trying to fly out of the Gulf Coast during summer makes you a weather geek, sort of just out of self-defense. Lori Hum, another longtime Travel Commons listener who travels in and out of the Southeast, had these thoughts. Hi, Mark. I'm still doing the Gulf Coast run, moving between Baton Rouge, and Jackson, Mississippi, so I concur with your summertime travel warning. However, as I also want to get home on Thursday night and staying over would get me home Friday at noon, I have just learned to be patient and, where possible, work the Delta Diamond line for my backup flights. The one drawback is in Jackson, the Delta side of the terminal, they have two security access points. The airport is one long building, has no restaurant or bar. I often remark to TSA about the cruel joke that it is putting a Starbucks right at the entry of security. Well, I'll tell you, back in September, I waited out a 5.5-hour delay on my United flight from New Orleans to Chicago. The only saving grace was that United sent me a delay notice before I left the airport. The email said my flight was delayed 2.75 hours, but that I still needed to be at the gate for my original departure time. I mean, doesn't that kind of defeat the purpose of the delay notice? Now, having spent more than my fair share of time in kind of New Orleans airport bars, I stayed in town, walked down, you know, to the Hyatt next to the Superdome. The ground floor restaurant, Borgne, B-O-R-G-N-E, I can never get the pronunciation of that right. Well, anyhow, it's part of the John Besh cooking empire. The guy must have a dozen restaurants in New Orleans, and I think I've eaten it damn close to all of them. Anyhow, I sat at the bar and worked my way through the $5 tapas menu, crispy turkey necks, which were actually pretty damn good, and duck liver crostini, and they had a great beer selection. I mean, given that, I just wasn't leaving until the inbound flight finally left O'Hare. I mean, the topper of it all was when I finally hit the ground in Chicago and turned on my phone, the first email I received was from United, asking me to tell us about your trip. Now, I got to tell you, that was a survey I couldn't wait to fill out. Now, we've talked about in past episodes how the airlines have really sort of amped up their social media presence, especially on Twitter. I mean, in my top holiday travel tips post last month, tip number 5 was, you know, use Twitter as a concierge service. You know, at naming an airline in the tweet, you know, something like, you know, at United, what's happening with UA 4286, you know, New Orleans to O'Hare, that it's, you know, an hour and 45 minutes delayed. You know, that usually gets a response in a couple of minutes. I mean, it's not always helpful, but there have been times when I've gotten, you know, information that the gate agent didn't. Now, I tell you, it can get a little creepy, though. I mean, at one point during that epic 5.5-hour delay, I tweeted out, you know, burning off a 4-hour United delay at a John Besh restaurant, much better than New Orleans airport food. And then I included a picture of the tapas menu that I was working my way through. A couple minutes later, United comes back with, at M. Peacock, we know delays aren't fun, but it looks like you found a great place to grab a bite and relax from your picture. So I guess there's just no way to hide with social media. Now, way back in April of 2012, I wrote a Travel Commons post disagreeing with surveys from TripAdvisor and Hotel.com that said the most popular hotel amenity is free Wi-Fi. I mean, in my mind, and what I said in that post is, the best hotel amenity is a free breakfast. I mean, it's a great convenience. Swinging by the concierge lounge to, you know, grab a quick egg, couple of slices of bacon, cup of coffee while I, you know, sort of cool down from my exercise on the elliptical trainer. So given that, I can't say that I've been thrilled when the Renaissance Hotels, which is normally where I stay in New Orleans, closed their lounges, and they told me this is chain-wide. They've closed their concierge lounges and moved the free breakfast to the main restaurant. Now, I got to tell you, I understand that from an operational point of view. I mean, it's more efficient to serve status guests off the regular buffet than to have, you know, some guy schlep pans of eggs and bacon up to some lounge on the top of the hotel. But, you know, while my eggs and bacon are probably fresher, it's just not as convenient. And that was the big thing about the free breakfast for me. I just can't swing through the lounge, grab my breakfast, and bolt. A hostess now needs to seat me. I wait for a server to bring me coffee, and then I need to wait again to sign a $0 check. You know, it's more efficient for the hotel. I got that. But it's not most more efficient for me. I mean, you know, it kind of feels like the hospitality concept here got lost in translation. Hey, and if you've got a travel observation, a question, a story, a comment, travel tip, the voice of the traveler, send it along. The email address is comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, or you can use your smartphone to record and send in an audio comment. Send a Twitter message to M. Peacock. You can post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page, or you can always go old school like Rich and Lori did and post your thoughts on the website at travelcommons.com. First topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is getting serious about hotel reviews. Look, it's no secret that reviews are a big thing in travel. SCADs, that's a fun word, SCADs of studies show online reviews are usually sort of the second or third in importance with somebody making a travel decision, ranking right behind personal recommendations from a friend. TripAdvisor remains the biggest player, accounting for about 32% of hotel reviews in North America, and that's according to the most recent study that I've seen, which was from a firm called Trust You, and they released that study this week. You know, other OTAs, online travel agents, for those of you not in the know, other OTAs like Priceline, Expedia, Booking.com, you know, they've all added reviews, you know, kind of, it seems like out of self-defense and with various, you know, and with varying degrees of success. I mean, it's easy to see this sort of behavior firsthand. Many of my colleagues will scan TripAdvisor before booking any new hotel, and my wife just scours it before booking our vacation rentals. And if you think about it, TripAdvisor has replaced the other side of the travel agent experience that the OTAs missed. I mean, Expedia, Orbitz have automated price searching and booking, but they didn't replace the advice that a good travel agent could give. You know, the information that she would collect when she followed up with her customers. So, you know, hey, how was that Marriott? Or what did you like best in Madrid? Now, I have a TripAdvisor account and occasionally contribute reviews, mostly hotels, though I've done a couple of restaurants and resort locations and some activities, like the Madrid food tour that I mentioned in the past episode. You know, and you do this because if you're going to, you know, you feel like you want to contribute back to the community, to the commons. Now, my first reviews were kind of typical. I talked about how nice the desk staff was or got overly indignant about some incident. You know, the kind of reviews that I now filter out when I'm scanning a property's page. So, I think to myself, you know, come on, I can do better than this. I mean, I've been consulting for 22 years. I've been doing a travel podcast for almost 9 years. You'd think I could do better. So over a couple of beers one night, I got to thinking about what's important to me when I stay at a hotel. And since since we've moved pretty much to rental properties for vacations, my hotel stays are just me, solo, on business. So, you know, sort of taking safety and general cleanliness And putting those aside as table stakes, though I got to tell you, there have been a few times when even those table stakes have been missing. But anyhow, if you set those aside as given, the things I tick through when I'm thinking about how many stars to award are, first, the bathroom. Now, we've talked about this in an earlier episode. In my mind, it might be the most important part of the hotel room. I look for good water pressure and enough counter space for my toiletries. I really hate having to put my toiletry kit on the toilet lid like I did last week at the Sheraton in New Orleans on Canal Street. So that's number one, is the bathroom. Number two, the room size. Look, is there enough room for a chair? I mean, other than the desk chair, a comfortable chair that I can sit and read or watch TV. Because I got to tell you, I hate having to sit on the bed all the time. Bed, I want to be able to sleep. I'd like to be able to sit up and just sit in a chair when I'm doing other stuff. So number two, room size. Number three, workout room. Now, here's a place where I see a lot of variation, from a couple of treadmills stuffed in some dank room to a full-blown fitness center, the Marriott Marquis on Times Square in New York. Though I think that hotel is a complete zoo, I love their workout room. So that's number three. What's the state of the workout room? Number four is location. Hey, am I within walking distance of something, of restaurants, of good bars, of interesting things to see? And then number five, service quality. Look, not just a welcoming front desk, though, that's important. But I got to tell you, it seems like most places are training for that, and they've got it down pretty well. But how about the service quality in the restaurant? Or kind of like the housekeeping service quality? Hey, do they keep the workout room stocked with water and towels? So that's it. That's my checklist. Bathroom number one, room size number two, workout room number three, location number four, service quality number five. So that's a little bit better for me. At least, I don't know. I think so. It's my list. Though when I decide I'm going to review a hotel, I got to tell you, my visit, how I look at things is a little bit different. I'm not just sort of cruising through the lobby on autopilot. I've got this list. I got one through five. And I don't know, I'm a bit more aware. I mean, is that a lipstick stain on my water glass? Do the hallway carpets look a little bit more beat up than they should? I don't know. Sort of having that observational mode sort of changes things. I feel like I got a responsibility to observe, and it probably affects my satisfaction with that hotel, sort of paying attention to things that I would normally let slide. And I got to tell you, I don't seem to be alone at this, at least, according to the Trust You survey. They found that hotels have now got fewer five-star reviews than a year ago. And their hypothesis is, as travelers read and use reviews more, their expectations of hotel service change toward what they're reading in reviews. They become more discerning consumers of hospitality services, which I guess isn't so bad unless it goes too far, like it has with this explosion of food bloggers. I tell you, if I see some guy setting up a tripod to photograph a particularly clever lobby check-in kiosk, that's the day I delete my TripAdvisor account. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is the TSA gets something right. Okay, look, I know I've been fixated on PreCheck over the past couple of episodes, but I really think that it's one of the best things that this very maligned agency has ever done. I mean, a year or so ago, a survey found that the TSA had the worst public perception of any part of the federal government, lower even than the IRS, which is pretty amazing if you think about it. So expanding the PreCheck program, though, I think could pull the TSA out of the cellar. And as I've said before, going through the pre-check lane is like traveling in pre-9/11 days. No shouting, no pulling everything out of your bag, no emptying your pockets, no taking off your shoes, no taking off your belt, no full body scanner, no arms above the head. Indeed, just about everything you hate about the TSA goes away. I mean, the screening is quick, the staff is nice, it's like flying in the last millennium, in the 1990s. Of course, the reason you get to saunter through the checkpoints unmolested is that you've given up $100 and a chunk of your privacy. I was in the first batch of TSA pre-check people because I'd already gone through the Global Entry program. Now, Global Entry is the U.S. Customs and Border Patrol's program to reduce, you know, hassles in the U.S. immigration lines. So in return for a background check, an hour-long interview, a travel history, and fingerprints, you get to use a kiosk rather than queuing up for an immigration agent when you're returning to the U.S. From international travel. So, and I got to say, in what I think is an encouraging display of common sense, I guess the TSA figured that, well, since their Border Patrol brethren had already screened, interviewed, and approved me for sort of light, you know, for a light once over at the border, I was probably low risk for blowing up an airplane. So since the fall, the TSA has been rapidly expanding PreCheck, adding lanes at existing airports like O'Hare and DFW, and expanding it to other airports. I think they're targeting, they said, like 100 in total. I got to tell you, I was pretty thrilled when they showed up at places like Portland, Oregon, and New Orleans. I mean, I'm happy to say I can't remember the last domestic airport I flew through that didn't have PreCheck. Now, the expansion, you know, has looked a little rough and ready in some places. Lori Hum wrote about PreCheck in Jackson, Mississippi. In Jackson, they don't have a body scanner. They still have the metal detector. And if you are PreCheck, they hand you a plastic card that allows you to bypass the procedures, even though you're in the same line as everyone. I mean, the process is laughable, as it just serves to confuse the large number of leisure travelers in line. It also holds up the line because the TSA is explaining the process every single time. I got to tell you, Lori, I had a very similar experience in New Orleans, actually just this past week. In the New Orleans airport, none of the three concourses are connected. They're kind of like it's kind of like LaGuardia in that way. Concourse B, which has Southwest, and Concourse D, which has United and Delta, they've got multiple TSA lanes and they've got separate pre-check lines. In Concourse C, which is American, I've only ever seen one security lane running, though they've got equipment for like three or four more. And there's no pre-check, no separate pre-check line. So, you know, this past Tuesday when I was coming through, I was ready, you know, sort of for the full strip down. But then the guy checking my license and boarding pass gave me a manila square of paper. I mean, actually, it looked like they'd cut up a manila folder. And then it had written on it, you know, pre and then the check mark. They'd, you know, handwritten that with a Sharpie. And so the guy gives me this square manila piece of paper folder. And, you know, so I got in line and I showed it to the guy running the body scanner. I still had to pull out my laptop, but I got to leave my shoes and belt on and walk through just the metal detector, where everyone else had to strip down for the body scanner. And like you, Lori, it felt very ad hoc, but I got to tell you, I was still happy not to have to disrobe. Now, if the additional lanes feel a little bit loose at times, the expansion to non-Global Entry flyers is a little bit interesting also. When my wife and I checked in for a November flight from Portland, Oregon to O'Hare, both our boarding passes had TSA pre-check printed on them. Now, my wife had never gotten that before. I mean, she hadn't applied for anything. It just showed up. We were wondering if there was some mistake, but we both walked into the pre-check lane. Screener put her boarding pass on the electronic reader, and there it was, the magic three beeps that say pre-check approved. And so off she went into the pre-check lane. The TSA has said it's randomly selecting regular passengers who, as a TSA spokesman described, show up clean. They said, the more information you give us about yourself, the more likely you are to be selected. Again, it's that sort of privacy convenience trade-off. Now, this might give some people pause, but I don't know, since, you know, kind of Edward Snowden has showed us that we've already given up pretty much most of our privacy to another federal agency called SA, the NSA. I don't know, we might as well get something back from the TSA. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 107. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. It has been a while. I bet, I don't know, you guys surprised that I showed up in your iTunes feed again? I got to tell you, I am not, again, I'm not quite sure what the bridge music is, because I haven't had time to pick it up before this recording. So I'll be, you know, sort of working that in post-production. If you liked a song, if you like something, check out the show notes for links at travelcommons.com. And again, if you have a story, a thought, a comment, a gripe, moans and groans, cries of anguish, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or audio file to comments, C-O-M-M-E-N-T-S at travelcommons.com, or to M. Peacock on Twitter, or write them on the Travel Commons wall on Facebook. I think that's what it's still called. I don't know, timeline, wall, whatever. Or post them on our website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken the time to send in emails, tweets, and post comments on the website. And again, thanks for everyone's patience. It's been a while since I pushed into the Travel Commons studio. Probably won't be that long a wait again in 2014. But until then, take care, travel safe. Thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.
Life is hell, strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing needs my mind, the warm woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears start falling, crying into the phone, within my heart you find my pictures of you at home. No matter where life takes me, how many miles I've